Let's look together now at the book of Nehemiah, chapter 3. Nehemiah, chapter 3. We study the book of Nehemiah in hopes that the Lord will do for us in some ways what he did in Nehemiah's day, as far as rebuilding is concerned. Nehemiah was rebuilding a city, and we trust in God's grace and power to rebuild a church for his glory. And before we look at this chapter, let me just introduce things in this way. The Lord used Nehemiah's zeal there in Jerusalem to galvanize the people into a team of workers. And it is that team of workers that we have listed here in detail in chapter 3. If you go back for a moment to chapter 2, what Nehemiah had said to these people in verse 17 of chapter 2 was, among other things, "Let us build. Come and let us build up the wall of Jerusalem." The people caught the burden, the vision, as we say, and they add their voice in verse 18 towards the end. They said, "Let us rise up and build." They said the same thing Nehemiah said, you see. The Lord used him to motivate and encourage them. And so then that enabled Nehemiah in verse 20 of chapter 2 to declare to these enemies, Sanballat, Tobiah, and Geshem, "We, the servants of God, will arise and build." And so the momentum is moving here. It must have been a very exciting time, even in the midst of opposition, and we're going to see more of it as we go through the book of Nehemiah here. But the Lord used Nehemiah to bring together this workforce. And what we have here in chapter 3 is a list of them and the portion of the wall and the gates that each one of them built. Nehemiah's memoirs here in this book include many lists. This is the first of quite a few that we're going to see. This is, I think, the longest one. And we want to try to cover the whole chapter if we can. As you read this chapter, it may seem tedious, maybe boring, maybe unnecessary, but we should never have that attitude toward inspiration. God wrote this down for our benefit, and the more I study it and the more I see in it here, the more fascinating and interesting and relevant and applicable it is to us. There's much to observe and much to learn here for us. So the people had a mind to work for the Lord. And this, of course, is what we need. We need a mind, a heart to work for the Lord, to serve, to labor, to do whatever we can, wherever we can, for His glory and for His cause. Verse 1 of chapter 3 says this, "Then Eliashib, The high priest rose up with his brethren, the priests, and they builded the sheep gate. They sanctified it and set up the doors of it, even unto the tower of Miah. They sanctified it unto the tower of Hananiel. Now, you might want to reference this map. This is a map showing the layout of the city. And you'll notice more or less towards the northeast part of the city of Jerusalem is the temple there, with a little box there. The sheep gate, which is mentioned here in verse 1, is just immediately north of that. And if you follow all the way through chapter 3, the construction begins up here in the northeast part, and the work was no doubt going on simultaneously by each one of these groups, all working wherever wherever they were stationed. But Nehemiah's account of it is given in a counterclockwise fashion. And so at the end of the chapter, here in verse 32, we come back around on the east side up to the sheep gate where we began. I had hoped to have time to pencil in where at least each verse corresponds around the perimeter here and around the walls and gates of the city. But I think I'll just have to let that be your homework assignment. That would be an interesting thing to kind of plot where each one was here. Also, you notice on this map is included back from chapter 2, the route that Nehemiah took when he went out on the midnight reconnaissance ride. And that's in the black dotted lines and hyphenated lines there, as you see. So according to this map, at least, he didn't make a complete circuit of the city, but kind of a survey of the farther outlying regions only. So that map is a helpful tool. If you're like me, I love maps anyway. I mean, Bible maps are just the cream of the crop. I could spend all day with a road atlas just looking at the names of towns and the geography and so on. I find it fascinating. Well, what I want to do here in this message is simply point out some of the striking features of this chapter and, of course, make some applications as we go along. We notice, first of all, in verse 1, the work began with the priests. And it began at the gate nearest to the temple. It's called the Sheep Gate. This was evidently the gate that was used to bring in sacrifices from the folds and the fields outside the city. When people were bringing in sacrifices, they would come through the sheep gate. The priests led the way in the reconstruction work. There is a lesson for us here, certainly. Those who are religious leaders ought to lead by example and be the first to roll up their sleeves and get into the work. There seems to have been something of a groundbreaking ceremony, or at least when the priests had laid the foundation stone, perhaps, there was some sort of a special commemoration service. They sanctified it, it says. And it says it twice over there with regard to the work that they did there in that part of the wall. This was maybe a dedication or, as I said, a groundbreaking event. They were rejoicing, and this was something to mark as a point to remember. Now, I think for the sake of time, we'll not read the whole chapter, but we'll read parts of it, and we may end up reading most of it once we've done it all. But let me point out, first of all, the wide variety of workers here. There are quite a few mentioned who did not come from Jerusalem and who came from other regions, other towns, other parts of Israel. We read in verse 2 of men from Jericho. Next unto him builded the men of Jericho. In verse 7, we see men from Gibeon and Mizpah. And you'll have to look those up on a bigger map in your Bible or in an atlas. These are outlying towns in various directions from Jerusalem. Verse 7, next unto them repaired Melatiah the Gibeonite and Jadon the Moronathite, the men of Gibeon and of Mizpah under the throne of the governor on this side the river. There's a place mentioned in verse 13 called Zanoah. Some of the inhabitants of Zanoah came and were involved in this work. In verse 14, but the dung gate repaired Malchiah, the son of Rechab, the ruler of part of Beth Hakkerem. He built it and set up the doors thereof, the locks thereof, and the bars thereof. Some mentioned in verse 16 from a place called Beth Zur, the ruler of half part of Beth Zur, Asbuk. Verses 17 and 18 mention people from Keilah, who you remember from the story of David. After him, verse 17, repaired the Levites, Reim, the son of Bani. Next unto him repaired Hashabiah, the ruler of the half part of Keilah in his part. After him repaired their brethren, Bevei, the son of Hinadad, the ruler of half part of Keilah. One writer thinks that the reason that so many of these who are mentioned are said to be ruler of the half part of one place or another, that this was so because the policy of the Persian Empire was not to put too much power in any one person's hands. And so every one of these cities had at least two rulers among them. And that's why they are said to be ruler of the half part of this or that location. If that's so, then it's even more significant that Nehemiah seems to be given a higher position and the sole governor over Jerusalem and its surroundings. So people come from out of town. There are others who come from who are locals, who are from Jerusalem. We have some of them mentioned in verse 10. They repaired places of the wall close to where they lived. Maybe their homes were located right next to the wall. Verse 10, next unto them repaired Jediah, the son of Harumaph, even over against his house, it says. There's another one in verse 23. After him repaired Benjamin and Hashab over against their house. After him repaired Azariah, the son of Maaseiah, the son of Ananiah, by his house. We see it once more in verse 28 and following. From above the horse gate repaired the priests, everyone over against his house. After them repaired Zadok, the son of Immer, over against his house. Verse 30, after him repaired Hananiah, the son of Shelemiah, and Hanan, the sixth son of Zalaph, another piece. And I wonder what happened to the other five sons. I mean, why weren't they involved? We don't know. I hope it was for a good reason. After him repaired Meshullam, the son of Berechiah, and here it is, over against his chamber. And so you have people from all over the place and some who live right there who are involved. How these people from other regions found out about it, or if they were, if they had relocated to Jerusalem and were actually living there at the time, we have no way to know. But you can certainly see, if we understand or if we assume that Nehemiah placed each group where he wanted them to be, he's sort of the foreman of the task, then it was very wise for him to have these who lived close to one portion of the wall repair that part, just for logistical reasons, as well as for maybe motivational reasons. These men had something personal at stake. If any part of the wall fails, they don't want it to be the part next to their home or their chamber. We've already read in some of these verses that some of those who were involved in the work were officers or rulers of some kind from Jerusalem. Verse 9, and next unto them repaired Rephaiah, the son of Hur, ruler of the half part of Jerusalem. And verse 12, next unto him repaired Shallum, the son of Heloesh, the ruler of the half part of Jerusalem, he and his daughters. And we should go ahead and mention that. That's quite remarkable that there were women involved in some of the work parties, at least in this one. What they did, we don't know, but I don't get the picture that they were, staying at home. They are out there contributing in some way to the work of building the wall. Well, needless to say, there's much that ladies can do to serve the Lord. They cannot preach, but there's much that they can do. Every Christian should preach in the informal sense, of course, to tell the good news to whatever in whatever opportunities we have, but to be a public preacher or minister or pastor is certainly against the scriptures. That needs to be stated in this day, doesn't it? There were Levites involved. These who were involved in the service in the temple. Verse 17, after him repaired the Levites, Reum, the son of Bani. Also, verse 18, after him repaired their brethren. And perhaps that means these were more Levites. There were these in verse 26 called Nethinims, who were literally temple servants of some kind. So they were involved. Moreover, the Nethinims dwelt in Ophel, under the place over against the water gate toward the east and the tower that lieth out. There were various occupations represented here. Particularly mentioned are goldsmiths, apothecaries, and merchants. Verse 8, next unto him repaired Uziel, the son of Hareah, of the goldsmiths. Next unto him also repaired Hananiah, the son of one of the apothecaries, and they fortified Jerusalem unto the broad wall. And then in verses 31 and 32, after him repaired Malchiah, the goldsmith's son, unto the place of the Nethinims and of the merchants, over against the gate of Mifkad, and to the going up of the corner, and between the going up of the corner unto the sheep gate repaired, who? The goldsmiths and the merchants. You think about these men. It was 50 some odd days, the exact number escapes me right now, but for many weeks these men are away from their livelihoods, their sources of income. There's great sacrifice on the part of merchants, apothecaries, and goldsmiths. We should expect our service and labor for the Lord to cost us something. If few years ago, a best-selling book in the Christian trinket shops was The Christian Life is a Party. Well, I don't think these men would quite agree with that. There was sacrifice, there was hard work. Let me just say a word about that while we're on that point. The kind of work that these people are doing is work that we would use heavy equipment for now. And they're doing this by hand and maybe with levers and, you know, whatever kinds of equipment or machines that they had. But it is physically demanding work, tiring, clearing out the debris and maybe salvaging what can be repurposed and reused and constructing anew and so on. I'm saying all that to say this. With this wide variety of workers, there was participation from all aspects, all walks of life. Everyone who could pitched in and did something. And in all that's recorded for us here in this chapter, I can't help but notice not a single one of them is said to be the builder, the contractor, the stonemason, the concrete expert, the professional builder. As far as we can tell, they didn't have the advantage of any of those things. It was people whose livelihood was in other things who gave of themselves to do work that perhaps they didn't feel particularly qualified for. But they did their best. They showed up ready to work nonetheless. A marvelous example for us as well. Let us do what we can for the cause of Christ, for His cause generally throughout the earth, and for His cause particularly here in the assembly where He has placed us. Many years ago, I heard someone say this: most of God's work in this world is done by those who are too busy, too tired, and don't know how. And there's some truth to that. The Lord uses surprising people from unlikely backgrounds to do His work. I mean, you look at the New Testament, here's the Lord Jesus, and who are His disciples? Fishermen? Men who you could tell by looking at them and listening to them, they're uneducated. The Pharisees and the people of the Jews recognized that. Unlearned men. But they also recognized that they had been with Jesus. May that be true of you and me also. What abilities do you have that the Lord might use? Well, whatever they are, use them. Let us be about our Master's business. Well, something else we notice here from this chapter is some were extraordinarily zealous and hardworking and went above and beyond, it seems. Look at verse 20. After him, Baruch, the son of Zabbai, earnestly repaired the other piece from the turning of the wall unto the door of the house of Eliashib, the high priest. Now, I don't know what you have to do to have this adverb inserted here by inspiration. It would certainly be a good thing, and we would think highly of Baruch if it simply said that he repaired the other piece of the wall. But it says he earnestly repaired. He's especially zealous. Thank the Lord for those who are able to earnestly labor. We should all aspire to that. There are some as well who we might say worked overtime. Once they had finished the portion that they were working on, they picked up their tools and went over to another section and started in on that. As we see comparing verse 4 with verse 21. Next unto them repaired Meremoth, the son of Urijah, the son of Koz. And next unto them repaired Meshullam, the son of Berechiah, the son of Meshezabeel. And next unto them repaired Zadok, the son of Baana. And it is this Meremoth who's mentioned at the beginning of the verse, who's also mentioned in verse 21. After him repaired Meremoth, the son of Urijah, the son of Koz, another piece, it says, from the door of the house of Eliashib unto the end of the house of Eliashib. Another group that worked double time were the Tekoites, mentioned in verse 5. Next unto them, the Tekoites repaired, and they are mentioned again in verse 27. After them, the Tekoites repaired another piece over against the great tower that lieth out even unto the wall of Ophel. Thank God for those who cannot seem to do enough for the Lord, for His cause. Again, let us all aspire to go above and beyond and to do more than we even ever thought we could to serve Him. Let me point out furthermore names that are not included in this list. Think of this. Some names we've already encountered here in the book of Nehemiah, for obvious reasons. Names not included in the construction crew are Sanballat, Tobiah, Geshem. Well, we didn't expect them to be listed here, did we? But one name that is interestingly not mentioned is that of Nehemiah himself. We don't read of any particular part of the wall that he himself rebuilt. There is a Nehemiah mentioned in verse 16, but it's not the same Nehemiah. After him repaired Nehemiah the son of Azbuk, the ruler of half part of Beth-Zur, unto the place over against the sepulchers of David and so on. Nehemiah was the overseer. His hands were quite full with coordinating. He's probably the one who is keeping watch over any enemies that might approach from without. He's helping keep supplied. He's acting as an encourager to everyone that he sees. As Matthew Henry put it, he was occupied steering the ship, and so he had no oar in his hand. But he was very much involved in what were his responsibilities. The overall picture that we see here in this chapter is a picture of orderliness, coordination. You notice the wording that's used over and over again is, and next unto him, and next unto them. These people are working in some proximity to one another, and it looks like everyone is getting along, and there's no arguments over, well, you didn't come far enough, you're supposed to get to this point, or whatever. I like to think of this as a beehive. If you ever watch, you know, a beehive, or maybe some of you have kept bees, I don't know, or watch a video of them, all those bees, they're all just busy as can be. None of them are just sitting still or standing still or whatever that bees do. They're all busy. And they're not fighting over each other. You'd think it would be otherwise. They don't seem to get in each other's way. And that's what's going on here. This beautiful beehive of hard work. I must confess, I do wonder how uniform the job turned out to be. You might say, well, this section of the wall looks like it wasn't built the same way or the same time as this section. Well, that's what happens when you have volunteers doing different parts of the work that come and join together. But, you know, I think if I were one of these people, after the job was done and I went out and took a tour, walked all around the perimeter of the city and saw all the different the joints maybe where, you know, obviously this is where work began and this is where it met up with another part of the job and so on, that would be a beautiful sight to behold. That is God's way of getting it done. And I just say that to say this. Though some may look at the Lord's work and despise it, those who are involved in it see His hand and see a beautiful thing that the Lord is doing, using the individual abilities, talents, gifts of different ones. The main thing, of course, was the structural integrity of the wall and the gates. As we said at the beginning, the work was done by willing-hearted people who sacrificed and gave of themselves. And I don't mean to romanticize about the ancient past and how, and overlook how difficult it was, but you have to imagine that at the end of a hard day's work, you know, their hands may be bleeding and they're building up these calluses and their feet are sore and so on, but there had to be a joy and a sense of accomplishment and rejoicing in the Lord that they had the opportunity to have a part in this work. And that's the spirit that we should have in the work the Lord has given us to do in as a church and in whatever we can do and whatever outreach that we can have that contributes to the Lord's cause. Let me just mention here in the time that remains some other things to learn here from this chapter. The beauty of teamwork. Nehemiah could not have done this work by himself. In fact, none of them mentioned here could have done it by themselves. But together, pooling their efforts and their resources, they were enabled to accomplish a great deal in a relatively short period of time. Every person involved was necessary, and we should not let that be lost on us. There's a New Testament principle set forth in this way. The eye cannot say unto the hand, I have no need of thee, nor the head to the feet, I have no need of you. Nay, much more, those members of the body which seem to be more feeble are necessary. You know, none of these people are saying, well, I'm just doing a little section of the wall. What I'm doing is not very important. I'm just going to pack up and go home. No. It's like a machine in which every gear is important. And you can have big gears and medium-sized gears and little gears. If any one of them fails to function, the whole machine fails. And that's what Paul is telling us here in this metaphor of the physical body. Every part of the body is necessary, whether it's the eye, the hand, the feet, and you know, members that are less honorable, on those we bestow more abundant honor, and so on. Well, let us take heed to that and rejoice in whatever part of the Lord's work that God has given us to do. Another important lesson, and this is something we shouldn't miss. God keeps records. It would be, sometimes as we're reading through Nehemiah, we think it would be a lot simpler if we just had this whole chapter condensed into one verse and say, Nehemiah had many helpers who showed up for 7.5 weeks and they were able to reconstruct the wall. Why all the detail, the names, the places, and who they were related to, or where they came from, and who of their family helped, and all this detail? Well, surely we should learn this. God is interested and God is concerned about the details and about each one of us individually and our little contribution of service and effort and labor for His glory. And we should be comforted in that. I haven't taken the time to count up how many different people are mentioned here by name, but how many of them do you suppose, as they were doing this work, this, you know, on hot days and cold nights and all the difficulties and smashed fingers and so on, ever dreamed that their names would be permanently recorded in inspiration? And here we are trying our best to pronounce them as best we can here in the year 2020. Well, let us learn from this that God keeps record and we should be comforted in that. Towards the end of the book of Revelation, Jesus says, "Behold, I come quickly, and my reward is with me to give to every man according as his work shall be." He knows the work you're doing. Your name is written in His book, and your labors for Him are written in some sense in His book or in His mind. I know He has prepared these works beforehand that we should walk in them and accomplish them. And it's grace added to grace, grace of reward added to the grace of enabling us to labor for Him. And so let us all be involved and do what we can in the Lord's work, in the gospel cause, here in our own assembly, in our community, and in any broader scale in which the Lord opens a door. There may be some that are in a situation or maybe a physical condition in which all they can do is simply pray for those who are more actively involved. And we should never underestimate the importance of that ministry of prayer. It occurred to me as I was meditating on this chapter that all of these who are mentioned, or well, virtually all of them, no doubt, had families at home, wives, probably children, in most cases. And those people, though their names aren't even mentioned here, we might think of them as support staff. They were covering bases for these men while they were gone. They were involved maybe in sending food out to them at lunchtime. There's more people were involved than even mentioned here, no doubt. And we should never despise those whose work is not so noticeable, or even work that only the Lord Himself even knows about. Perhaps there were those who were so far beyond their prime they couldn't even, you know, throw a hammer, but they could encourage others by word, by prayer. Let us help and encourage one another in any way that we can. Use our gifts and talents for the Lord. Now, one last thing I want to point out here. And that is this. All these that we've mentioned here and read about were remembered. And the fact that we're reading about them today, we're still remembering them. Certainly God remembers them. And we should consider how we will be remembered. Now we may figure out that our work and influence is so small, probably nobody will remember us. But that's okay, the Lord will remember us. But if anyone does happen to remember us on earth, will they remember us as diligent, faithful, and like this character in verse 20, Baruch, the son of Zabai, earnestly working and laboring? There's really only one low spot, one dark spot in this bright chapter of Nehemiah 3, and that is in verse 5. Notice how these men were remembered and are remembered to this day. Verse 5 says, "Next unto them, the Tekoites repaired, but their nobles put not their necks to the work of their Lord." So Nehemiah is recording here, warts and all, we might say, isn't he? And there's much to glean from that simple verse. One thing is, we don't know if these nobles were just lazy, didn't want to work. Or one writer I read after thinks that the wording used here about putting their necks to the work is the picture of, you know, an animal, an ox, let's say, putting his neck in a yoke, a very servile kind of task. And maybe they just thought they were too good. Not so much a matter of laziness, but of pride. Let us never be lazy. Certainly, let us never think we are too good to do the lowest task for our Savior. Another thing is, even with such poor examples as these nobles, the men who came with them, or the men who knew them, labored on in spite of poor leadership from these nobles. And as if to add an exclamation point to it all, we find these same men in verse 27 were some who did double duty. After them, the Tekoites repaired another piece. Think of that. If anything ought to have put these nobles to shame, it's the fact that the men who were their friends and companions did not one section, but two sections. So, how will you be remembered? Of course, the main question is, how will God remember you? How does God view your service? May the Lord make us humble, earnest, diligent to do what building we can do for Him while we can, while we have life, while we have opportunity, while we have our faculties. Let us all ponder here today, what can I do for God? And do it faithfully and all together as teamwork. The Lord may be pleased to accomplish more than we would ever imagine. May it be so.